This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Score, the Charles Russell Speechlease podcast, where we examine the legal and strategic issues confronting sport, looking to identify solutions and future trends. My name is Darren Bailey. I'm a consultant to the sports team here at Charles Russell Speechlease. And today, I'm pleased to say we're going to be looking at the ongoing challenges presented by COVID-19, specifically in relation today of the employment side of things, in relation to resumption of play, training, and just perhaps that return to normality. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by Emily Chalky from the firm's employment team, who somehow has made time available to us in these very, very busy times to explain some of the intricacies facing sport in these challenging times. Emily, welcome.
Thank you very much, Darren. Yeah, as you say, I am an employment solicitor, a senior associate at Charles Russell Speechlease. Very busy at the moment, and we're advising lots of our sports clients in relation to the job retention scheme and also the all-important return to work and return to normal play, and the problems that faces in relation to creating a safe working environment for players, athletes and non-playing staff to return to work and get back to a bit of normality.
Well, we all look forward to that, I'm sure. But I think it's fascinating with the sports side of things. It's one of those sectors that has just thrown up just so many, many tricky issues to handle. And it's almost on a daily basis where something else is emerging that people haven't perhaps thought of. And what I thought we could do today, Emily, is just have a little bit of a discussion on some of the unique characteristics of sport in terms of contact and proximity, as well as the scrutiny and the exposure of the sector, perhaps compared to some of the others. We can also take a look at some of the contrasting challenges faced by elite performers across different sports. Now, trying to compare, say, horse racing to rugby, to basketball, very different sports, very different solutions. I'd like to take a look at that. And if we could look also, we spend a lot of time talking about the players, but there's a lot of facilitators behind the scenes, administrators and media, and they've all got to get back into play as well to make this happen. And then one thing that I'm not hearing a lot about at the moment, which I'd really value a chat with you about, is that whole grassroots and amateur side of things and what's going on at the lower levels. And just worries me a little bit that we could be having some longer term consequences that we're not seeing right now. So we've got a great agenda to get through. So, Emily, one sport close to my heart is rugby union. I spend a lot of time working in it. And the nature of the sport makes it very challenging during the resumption phase in terms of employment law. And unless I dreamt it, did I see that they're also not only having to deal with the difficulties of contact, non-contact and resumption, but they're also having to adjust their furlough arrangements depending on what phase of the return to play they've reached. That all sounds incredibly complex. What's going on there?
It's not really all surprising, but as we're kind of transitioning in from kind of stage one, where rugby is kind of on their stage one training, which is very individual, we're trying to get players fit and ready, but it's more of a kind of individual fitness program, but very much looking to this stage two, where training will resume in a more kind of contact way, where clubs and teams will be coming together, training together in a obviously social distance manner and abiding by health and safety as far as they can. But it will be very much stage two, formal, coached and actually having contact. And what the furlough scheme has said is that where you have someone who is on furlough, an employee, in this instance a player, a rugby player, and they cannot work. So stage one, where it is very much individual training, you can see that probably isn't work, it's training. But when you formalise and you make that more organised and supervised, it's more akin to actual work that these players are doing. So it really puts a massive question mark over whether you can be training under stage two and be on furlough. And the indications we've seen is that you cannot be furloughed while you're training at stage two. So it's a real important consideration for these clubs whether they can afford to have players, commencing stage two training, but also, they want to start training and preparing for when matches resume as normal.
Well, your first answer there shows you why you're so busy. It's an incredibly complex range of considerations for these sports bodies to have. And one of the things that's very interesting is that the government guidelines have obviously provided some level of assistance, but it remains the case, doesn't it, that it's really the individual sport's responsibility to make sure that they're completely comfortable with the return to play conditionality, and their responsibility is going to be one that they have to stand behind.
So the government has issued some guidance on how to return to work, or the workplace in this instance. In first instance, it will be training facilities to make those places secure. You know, some of it is very standard, such as social distancing, hygiene, cleaning. But within sport, as you say, everything is so different in terms of horse racing, to rugby, to judo. You know, they're all different sports. And at the moment, you have a kind of one-size-fits-all government guidance, which really states that you need to have an appointed health safety officer, so an accountable person, and you also need to have a medical officer. You essentially putting together these risk assessments, very detailed risk assessments. You should also be consulting with your employees about the measures that you're putting in place, so that it's a two-way process. That's for your playing and non-playing staff, so that they're part of that process. So it really is a minefield, and you know, the kind of burden upon employers and clubs and associations is, you have to get this right, because the risk assessment is so important, because if you get it wrong, the penalties can be high, and it's not just fines. There can be criminal liability in relation to that. So it is making sure that you use the government guidance, but you are putting a tailored and specific risk assessment in place for your business, your club, your association, to such a really high standard, because the penalties are, you know, really high if you get that wrong.
I mean, one of the things I wonder about is that, you know, we all naturally have a focus on the performers, and it's very clear that the reputation of the sports depend on the health and well-being of those individuals being maintained. Do you think there's a bit of a gap emerging, with the focus all being on the front end and the players and the performers and the stars, and yet all of the other actors that are involved in facilitating sport, filming sport, creating sport, allowing people in and out? And so, do you think there's a danger that it might take their eye off the ball? Because as I see it, there's no difference between the duties and responsibilities for those individuals, and yet the focus necessarily has always been on getting back to play. How do you see that emerging, and what are some of the dangers in that?
Yeah, exactly. And I think if these are your employees, these are all facilitators and employees from a employment perspective. Obviously, you have people coming onto your venues and sites that you have a different duty of care for. But yeah, I'm going to concentrate on the employees as an employment lawyer. But you know, there's a lot of focus on the players, making sure that they don't contract COVID, they don't spread COVID, and you know, their welfare and their safety, but also with trying to get the game and matches back to the forefront as quickly as possible. But what is really important is everyone you employ to make sport happen, you have a duty of care as their employer. And so the risk is just as serious, and their welfare is just as serious. And you need to kind of think of risk assessment in the broad. So, you know, it's not just about what you're doing on site, but thinking about, you know, how your employees are traveling to their place of work. So many of them, particularly within the London football clubs, where you know, their place of work is the stadium within London, they're going to have to get public transport. You know, that could be seen as quite high risk, them having to get onto public transport to get to work. So you need to be thinking about, in your risk assessment, ways of mitigating that risk. And it may be that you agree a kind of flexible working arrangement where they can start later, leave later, so that they're not commuting on those really busy times, and to help protect those staff as well.
Yeah, I think those are issues that they must be contending with at the moment. And one other issue, of course, that we face with sport is that we've seen with the West Indies team flying in today to sort of self-isolate in advance of a test series against England. You've got that international component. And although it feels some time away, they've got to take into consideration how bringing people into the territory has to be done at a very, very tricky time. And I wonder whether you can see real significant issues associated with getting back to going overseas to play and sending staff overseas into different territories in order to allow overseas fixtures to take place. I mean, that feels a long way off right now.
Yeah, I think it does feel like a long way off. But I think, everything's going to have to be done within the government guidance, of course. And so when the government kind of gives the green light for that, but it's still going to need to be very measured and steps taken to ensure the safety of your employees. And it's really important that the employees feel comfortable. And I mentioned about, consulting with staff around risk assessment, because, when you are opening them up to such as international travel, which could kind of heighten the risk of the infection rates, you do need to make sure that they feel comfortable and willing. And because the risk around employees' claims, you do have a duty of care to your employees. And what I think we as employment lawyers have been advising is, there is this risk that if an employee doesn't feel safe, doesn't feel like a proper and adequate risk assessment has been done, and that they are being put into danger, it could come up with all sorts of like whistleblowing claims. So if they, raise this as a protected disclosure, you're later seeing them allege, whether it has merit or not, that they have been detrimented, whether that's, not getting a promotion or a bonus because they haven't been on these kind of international travel, or that later made redundant. They may say, well, that is connected because I blew the whistle. And there's also a further claim that employees who have kind of designated responsibilities as a kind of safety officer can also have a similar whistleblowing claim around them raising kind of issues of concerns around health and safety and feeling that they've been treated to their detriment later down the line and trying to connect the two. And so we've been kind of really advising our clients that, kind of return to work and return to normal play and travel, it really needs to be a two-way street. You need to be consulting with your staff to kind of avoid these claims, because whistleblowing claims is probably one of the extreme cases. You've obviously got kind of personal injury if COVID is contracted and you've been negligent in any way, and obviously the reputational damage. But whistleblowing claims is one that we can foresee many months down the line. And it is really important for employers to be aware that if whistleblowing can be proved, compensation that an employee may be entitled to can essentially be uncapped if they can prove that they've had loss of earnings connected to the end of their employment, and if there is going to take them a long time to find another job and they're high earners, that could be uncapped. So it could be quite a hefty liability for employers and clubs to face. So it's really important that everything that's been done is you're consulting with staff and they're broadly feeling happy about their safety and return to work.
That concept of uncapped liability feels like a real clear danger for sport, because the level of scrutiny and media coverage obviously generates circumstances in which stories are often passed around. So I think that reputation management and uncapped liability just makes it so essential, doesn't it, that the processes that have been gone through are absolutely cast iron.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reputation, obviously, that's a risk and a concern for most sports clubs, and you want to be seen as being a compassionate employer, not have your name in the papers for you essentially putting your staff at risk.
And I guess one of the things that's been on my mind, I mean, it's fantastic that we've got the resource in the employment team to be able to deal with these high level sports issues. One of the matters I just don't think is on the radar at the moment is how this is going to play through when we start to get to the resumption of grassroots or the amateur game, where there's a vast network of volunteer clubs and individuals that may be making really difficult decisions in circumstances where the consequences for them may not be known, and the resources available to them to undertake these reviews, that's just simply not available. Have you turned your attention in the employment team to how those types of issues are going to play through?
Yeah, so we have started looking at this, and I think on a very high level, as you mentioned, much of these grassroots clubs are, you know, they don't have armies of employees. They're kind of relying on volunteers. And so the club's duty of care to volunteers, it is slightly different because you don't have that employer-employee relationship where the duty of care is very high. But, you know, these volunteers still make up your essential workforce to help, you know, create the association or training or matches. And so, you know, that in terms of health and safety, the health and safety assessment for those volunteers, for that kind of workforce, needs to be undertaken. But in terms of claims in an employment aspect, if you are a true volunteer, volunteers have very limited kind of recourse against the club and the association. But you know, the club still has a lot of responsibility, just as it would to any participants, any members of public who they're dealing with. You know, they still have a kind of level under health and safety legislation that, you know, their risk assessment is thorough and is covering off the requirements to keep those volunteers safe. But as you say, I think it may be some time before we see these amateur clubs up and running again, because, you know, to get those risk assessments completed, you know, there needs to be resource and people available to make that happen.
Yeah, I do worry about that phase, and I'm hoping that they'll get all of the help and the assistance and the guidance that they need, because in many ways their dangers and vulnerabilities are perhaps even more than at the elite end. And it's part of that unique framework we spoke about at the outset, isn't it? Sport just is just a little bit different from most sectors. We spoke a little bit about teams traveling overseas. We've spoken about the immense level of scrutiny at the top end of the game. We've spoken about the immense vulnerability at the lower levels of the game and the grassroots. And I think it just is such a complex time with COVID-19 that I'm very reassured that we have a dedicated team that can provide support for the sports team on these really difficult and tricky issues, because my fear is, in an increasingly litigious world, if people get this wrong, we could have a mountain of employment claims. And across the sports sector, which would be really, you know, a diversion and a complete waste of resources when everyone generally just wants to get back to normal. Do you have any feel over that longer term risk of quite a lot of cases and claims managers emerging and that type of thing?
Yeah, I think there's twofold. You know, there will be claims to do with kind of contractual changes that have needed to be made, playing and non-playing, whether that's kind of around remuneration. And then there'll be the piece around returning to work. And if that will predominantly be within the health and safety space and duty to care. You know, I think we're a little way off of seeing the actual claims being issued, but it's something we're certainly expecting, because, you know, the advice we have been giving our clients and the kind of conversations we're having with our clients in relation to, you know, how they're managing this and the kind of general feel that they're getting from some of their employees. I think the majority of their employees are really trying to work with them and, you know, can understand that they're in a really difficult situation. But there will be a minority who will come out of this process feeling very disgruntled and wanting to exercise their rights through the employment tribunal.
Emily, I think you're absolutely right. I hope that's kept to a minimum, and with the advice that that you guys are providing, I'm sure that's the case. But I think we're in for some very interesting times. I think we will not get back to the old days. I even think that in relation to things like player contracts, we may see a slight shift towards more employment orientated contracts rather than fixed term arrangements. So I think everything is in play, if you like, in the sports and the employment sense. And it's great to have had the opportunity to listen to your views. And I feel like the sports world is in safe hands with the employment team operating in the way that they do. So thank you very much for your time today, for making things very clear in a complex environment. And hopefully talk to you soon.
Brilliant. Thank you.
This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.